$68,000 a day just in food and beverage, which is an extraordinary amount for a hotel. And they're charging rates that are three times the average in the District of Columbia and higher than any other luxury hotel, even though nothing distinguishes them. This is a kleptocracy in the making. And the deals with China, where Trump used to be very critical of China, now he and his family have well more than 100 trademarks in China. And suddenly, they're not so critical of the Chinese anymore. This is a presidency for profit.
James Henry, we have 10 seconds. Your prediction about how this plan will go in Congress.
I think they're going to race it through the Congress without any debate, no hearings. And we're going to have a gigantic tax war where what we really should be doing is working with our allies and countries around the world to establish a fair taxation. This upsets 10 years of progress with the OECD.
We're
going
to have to leave it there. I want to thank James Henry, economist with the Tax Justice Network, and David K. Johnston. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, more talk radio. Call in at 503-231-8187. But first, these messages.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Decolonizing Our Activism Workshop, Saturday, October 28th at the Native American Youth and Family Center in Portland. The Decolonizing Our Activism Workshop welcomes all to attend this free, life-changing training, which incorporates traditional Native American teachings through stories, exercises, and discussions that are even more relevant and needed today. These workshops are conducted in a respectful way that is both healing and empowering. Again, that is Decolonizing Our Activism Workshop on Saturday, October 28th, 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the Native American Youth and Family Center, 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard, Portland, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Journalist, author, and activist David Barsamian will be speaking about the broad coalition in opposition to the Trump administration, which includes activists from a range of causes, progressive Democrats, and concerned Republicans. He'll be reflecting on the core issues at stake today and why so many people from such a range of identities and perspectives are challenging the administration. Again, that's KBOO Presents David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO, your community radio station, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany area. Via the World Wide Web, it's kboo.fm. And this is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott, and today is Monday, October 23rd, 2017. Following listening to Democracy Today, I'm always conflicted by one, our intended conversation and hearing news and thoughts from Democracy Now. As is often the case, I am, as many of you are, I suspect, worried and confounded and concerned about the state of our world and particularly the national government of the United States. We have a long way to go to transform our nations, ourselves, and our world. But speaking of transformation, some of the things we hope to talk about this morning is one is the movement of mindfulness. Celeste has reflected on that and will share some of her thoughts about it. And also, we will talk about this morning of the hashtag MeToo movement, something that has taken over social media in the last couple of weeks as women have shared their stories of sexual harassment. This is something that is part of our societies and something that for some of us becoming more aware of. And in recent weeks, we have been aware of a certain Hollywood personality, a Hollywood producer, and women who have stepped up and shared how they have been sexually harassed by this person. Many of us are aware in recent years about men and how they have piled on women. It might have been Hollywood entertainers such as Bill Cosby, may have been politicians such as the President of the United States, and it may be people who are family members, friends, and co-workers. But we'll talk about that and allow the voice of women to be heard. Our phone numbers are 503-231-8187 for you to put down and share your thoughts. But first, I want to reference a couple of comments by people who have written about this movement. First, I want to honor Tarana Burke, who started a movement that she created, you know, over 10 years ago. Amy Holheiser in the Washington Post writes about her, and that I think we should uplift for many people who have been only encountered with this movement have been social media. I want to lift up what Tarana Burke has done and lift up the voices of women of color. So Abby Holheiser in the Washington Post wrote a few days ago, Tarana Burke was watching as hashtag MeToo became an internet phenomenon Sunday. Soon, she started to panic. By the time celebrities were tweeting hashtag MeToo, encouraging every woman who had survived sexual harassment or assault to do the same, Burke knew she had to do something. She didn't know where to start. If this grows big, she recalled thinking at the time, this is going to completely overshadow my work. Hashtag MeToo, the viral awareness campaign that inspired millions of posts on Facebook and Twitter, did not begin with Alyssa Milano. It didn't even begin as a response to the dozens of women who had spoken out about the alleged sexual misconduct of disgraced Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein. It did not begin in 2017. More than a decade ago, Burke was the one who identified the power of the phrase Me Too as one that could help women. She founded the Me Too movement in 2006 because she, as someone who experienced sexual assault, wanted to do something to help girls and women, particularly women and girls of color, who had also survived sexual violence. She, in the middle of working on a documentary called Me Too that comes out next year. As hashtag Me Too exploded over the weekend, Burke saw the hope and empathy that she knew those words could inspire in the women who chose to tweet. But her experience told her that the viral hashtag could, despite its best intentions, undo much of what she worked to build at a moment when there was so much more to do. On Sunday night, Burke began to tweet. I had to ring the alarm, she said in an interview Wednesday morning. One, because my work is erased, and two, because if I can support people, I had to do that. It made my heart swell to see women using this idea, one that we call empowerment through empathy, she tweeted, to not only show the world how widespread and pervasive sexual violence is, but also to let other survivors know that they are not alone. Hashtag me too. It's beyond a hashtag. It's the start of a larger conversation and a movement for radical community healing. Join us, hashtag me too, Burke wrote. Viral campaigns like the hashtag me too can work like interventions in the news cycle. This one emerged after weeks of growing accusation of sexual assault against women, against Weinstein, and had helped redirect a conversation about one man towards one about the women who had survived sexual harassment or sexual assault. The hashtag is meant for the public, a massive show of scale to prove that the issue is unavoidable. Its audience is everyone, particularly men. Burke, with the help of Black Twitter, had staged her own intervention as hashtag MeToo spread, with surprising success. Burke did not have a national profile, and her hashtag MeToo work was not well known beyond the community where she had concentrated her activism. So those who knew Burke's work began to tweet about it. Others pointed to the other similar viral movement, like the hashtag What Were You Wearing, hashtag You're Okay Sis, and hashtag Survivor Privilege, that were all started by women of color. By Monday, Ebony magazine had a short feature on Burke and her life's work. Other outlets soon followed, and eventually Alyssa Milano, credited in many early media stories for starting hashtag MeToo, also directed her followers to learn about the movement that preceded the hashtag. Part of the message here is that a viral hashtag that was largely spread and amplified by white women actually has its origin in a decade of work by a woman of color. But it is also this. It will take more than a hashtag, however meaningful it has become, to do the real work that is needed now. As Burke told me, it's also people's lives. It's a very touching, private, deeply personal thing. Me Too grew out of Burke's work with young girls. Burke, who is 44, grew up in the Bronx and has spent most of the past 25 years as an activist and organizer around the country, working to help young people in marginalized communities. In Alabama, Burke worked at an organization that ran a young youth camp. There was a girl there. Burke publicly calls her Heaven when she tells this story. Who clung to her? People would call her trouble, Burke said, and she was trouble because she was a survivor. Heaven was about 13 years old. One day, Heaven wanted to talk to Burke privately. She began to tell Burke about the sexual violence she had survived. I was not ready, Burke said. When she disclosed, I rejected her. She sent her to someone else. She never came back to camp, Burke said. To this day, she doesn't know what happened to Heaven. The guilt Burke felt became a refrain, a repeated question. Why couldn't you just say, me too? Those are the words of Abby Holheiser from the Washington Post as she wrote about Tarana Burke and how she started the hashtag MeToo movement. As we have seen the hashtag MeToo tweeted across social media, the question becomes, what can men do? I often see how men have either commented or sought to talk about their stories. But it is my understanding that this is about women, and men, at least initially, need to be silent and hear the voices. Voices of our sisters, mothers, wives, daughters, and friends. And allow women to speak and then respond. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO, your community radio station. I am Cecil Prescott.
I am Celeste Carey, and this is your community connection. Now, I want to commend men in stepping up in this fashion. First and foremost, thanks to my co-host here, because despite the fact that this has a legitimacy, an incredible legitimacy, coming from the mouths of women, it's also the support that men have to offer. And it's the gravitas that men have to offer to each other about how serious this is. And without men as allies, it makes it difficult sometimes to pierce the, I guess I'll call it gender-flavored, gender-colored, gender perspective that can come with addressing harassment and the seriousness of it. So thank you not only for leading the conversation, but also for focusing, in fact, that this has been the effort of women of color who have sought to create a safe space for women. Second, women, we shape this by creating a space for women to feel safe, to feel respected, to feel supported, but also to figure out what are the ground rules for how we want changes to take place. There are going to be changes that I think have to be determined and developed and decided within both camps, though, I think. Because men need to recognize the responsibility to step up sooner. I was not at all encouraged. I was not at all respectful. I was not at all believing when I was reading, for example, Quentin Tarantino's response. It's like, you're not exactly known for sensitivity anyway, Quentin. So the fact that you even said anything probably damns you more than it helps us, you know, as women, you know, and it's just you celebrating the boys' club, so to speak. And if you really understood the damage that's caused by this dynamic, I think you would have had a different tone and tenor entirely to your conversation. There is a place for men to speak out. I think about Hannibal Buress, the comedian who spoke out, at least with regard to the fact that it's possible that Bill Cosby did this. I'm not going to go any deeper into that, but just the fact that he spoke out that this is possible, you know. Now, I'm not talking about doing it for personal gain. I'm talking about for being the voice of our culture, of our society, you know. And all of a sudden, I've lost his name, but if you recall a part of history during McCarthyism, you had the one legislator who finally looked at McCarthy and said, have you no decency, sir, at last? You know, have you no decency? And that's the voice of reason we need, especially to come from men, because it pierces that gender colored lens, I think, and it holds each other accountable as fathers should, as brothers should, as uncles should. But the space also needs to be determined and decided by women. And so I especially want to hear from women today with regard to how we can address the idea of sexual harassment. And what do we need? What do we need from each other? What, as women, what do we need from men? What do we need from ourselves as a culture? And think about things that we can realistically attempt, which means that on some level it's going to be a grassroots, a micro level effort. You know, yes, we do need to change the Hollywood industry, and we need to abolish things like the casting couch. And I'm not going to be naive. I remember when I was in college hearing that the casting couch exists for men and women, and it's both hetero and homosexual, as my teacher put it. She says, don't be naive. But we want to talk about how do we affect it on a local level, on a grassroots level, on a personal level, on a micro level as well, whether it be in our institutions of learning, news, media, library choices. I don't know. What do you think, Cecil?
I think we need to hear the voices of women.
All right.
Our numbers here are 503-231-8187.
Excellent. And so I'm having problems here with my headphone. So when we do get callers, I might have to switch here, my little spot, so you see me playing with it. So now I'm not saying, men, you don't get to call, but you don't get to call and pontificate unless you have some excellent ideas how you're knocking sense. And I'm saying that both playfully and metaphorically to the young males in your charge or the older males that you work with to kind of share some ways that you might find in helping make those change. And this is not a time to be reticent to call in. I know sometimes people want to wait to the last minute, or they think, well, you know, I don't know if I want to weigh in on this conversation. It's a little heavy, or it's this, or it's that. This might be that very conversation that you actually have something valuable to say. So we want to encourage women. We want to encourage new callers. And we want to encourage some thought and ways that we can create a society of accountability. And the number is 503-231-8187. Of the articles that I shared with you, what do you think, which one do you think made the most effect, profound effect on you? Just because I tried not to overwhelm you with a bunch.
Well, you certainly did share some things. And so there's a lot. What I found helpful for me were to hear the voices of women and not to hear the voices of men. And for men who said, what can they do? I thought a Facebook page that Nicole Stamp first wrote and later was expanded, I think, and online on CNN.com, where she talked about practical steps for men. So, for example, she mentioned that concrete ways men can help, and specifically she's talking about men who feel themselves as potential allies or first, he said, practice phrases like, that's not cool. That's a bad thing to say to other men who say disrespectful things to women. follow feminist writers on social media. And I think that's so important. Sometimes we need to hear the voices of women and not just people who other masculine voices. And also to boast female voices, particularly, you know, marginalized groups, who are women, indigenous, black, and women of color. Those voices need to be heard. Boast what women say at work. Listen for men who dismiss women's contributions, she writes. Be mindful of how you introduce women. I came across a study that that oftentimes men are introduced by their job position or their title, less so for women. So Dr. Joe, as opposed to, is often referred to Dr. Joe, and the physician who's a woman is often referred to by her first name. Those are just some examples that she mentioned of what men can do.
One of the things that I think is really helpful, and this is a delicate area, is don't be afraid to call out women who are supporting that system of harassment, because there have been women who have marginalized the voices or shut them down or tried to make excuses. And even though this is not directly related to gender-based sexual harassment, I think of the conversation between Corey Feldman and Barbara Walters a while back when he was trying to explain the underbelly of pedophilia in Hollywood. And Barbara Walters basically said, "What? Well, you're basically destroying a whole industry," as if that somehow negated the seriousness of Corey Feldman's statement. And when you hear anyone marginalizing a woman's claim, and especially when that claim is it's common knowledge, okay? Don't accept that. And you may need to confer with women that you work with or women in your family to make sure that you do get the language right. But it's okay to call out a woman who says, "Oh, no, there's nothing to that. Oh, no, you must be imagining things." Or, "Oh, no, isn't that just boys being boys?" Don't let the fact that there's going to be I hate to say Judas, but I'm trying to think of an alternative phrase. There's going to be people who are going to play that game.
I'll allow you to comment. It's been my experience that it's more difficult. Those who deny tend to be men.
Yes.
And I, it's harder to, that's more of a problem than the occasional woman who might dismiss another woman's claim for who knows what reasons. But I think you're quite correct to acknowledge people when they say, acknowledge women when they have the strength to share their story.
Yeah, this is not something that's easy to address. And you know, I'm wondering, is that one reason why we're having people being a little hesitant about calling in? It's the gravity of it, or because I can't accept that, well, we've heard it too much in the news. Well, how much is too much to hear about a need for change? We're okay with talking a lot about how much we need to challenge the tax policies coming out of the Trump administration. We're okay when we're talking about the abuses of a narcissistic personality or the overreach of identity politics, but I'm curious about this ponderous and this present silence, you know. Hey, 503-231-8187. Because trust me, I got a bunch of articles. Now, to this end, I also have some articles, an article about mindfulness. And I thought it was really important to address that as well, because it's going to take a certain level of mindfulness to successfully address making a cultural shift against sexual harassment. There are people who may feel that a certain amount of power and dominion over someone with regard to sexual dynamics is their due, that they're owed that. Mm-hmm. That's the benefit of power or of position or fame. And let us not forget that those are exactly the words that we heard from our now President Trump when he was justifying groping women. You know, it's like, well, I'm a star. You know, I'm a money-made man. So I get to do this.
Yes.
You know, this is my purview. These are the perks. And so we want really to be mindful about how there is a very deliberate and supporting effort that needs to come from this. It means you have to sit down, you have to listen and sift words, and you have to listen carefully to the emotions coming out and think about the intention that the person who is revealing this problem is bringing to the environment, and then you have to be mindful in how you address it. So, you know, we can talk a little bit about that, but I want to limit the scope of mindfulness to how we address the dynamic that needs to change with the power of sexual harassment.
So, Min, if you call, tell us how do you listen to women, and how you are able to support women, and women, you are invited to share your stories or advice or recommendations. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let us go to a caller.
Okay, as soon as our engineer gets back into position here, he'll make a shift for us. Okay, we haven't got the high sign yet.
Okay.
Well, let me take this moment to say you are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metropolitan area. Online, it's kboo.fm. In the Columbia River Gorge, it's 91.9 FM. And in the Willamette River Valley, it's 104.3. And you are listening to More Talk Radio. We are looking to see, okay,
when, I guess that call,
our engineer is engaged. I guess that call wasn't for us. So once again, let me get a phone number since we've got open lines, y'all. 503-231-8187. Well, while we've got people trying to decide whether or not they want to weigh in on this, I'm going to visit one of the articles that I sent you. And again, thank you for bringing this back to the fact that women of color are involved in this, and it makes it really hard sometimes to get the appreciation and respect that we have. I do want to say, as a woman of color, sometimes when you're trying to make announcements or share your story, it has the extra intersectionality of being a person of color. Because I'm looking at, for example, the articles that were discussing Harvey Weinstein. And the fact that for some reason Lupita Nyong'o's claims were pointedly dismissed and pointedly challenged. And I was wondering, okay, what is the significance of this? Am I missing something? Is it because, you know, well, I guess I'll just say it. Is it because she's a black woman? Oh, no, I don't date black women, you know. And I've heard people say such.
Okay, let's...
Okay, my headphones are...
Oh, so Les is having problems, so she couldn't hear Joe. So let's go to Brittany. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I just wanted to share something a story. It's something that happened yesterday, actually, at work. And it was one of my coworkers was coming from the back room, and he was, like, laughing and saying, oh, good times. And I said, what are you talking about? You know, and he told me that he was just talking about some other male coworkers talking to them about his uncle and some story that his uncle had about how he was, you know, how he would get with women and something about how he would, something with lime juice. It was just like a joke, but it just, like, it shocked me how comfortable he was, like, sharing that with me, and then also, like, telling me how he was just having that discussion with a bunch of other male coworkers. And this same guy, like, a couple weeks ago, there was a black man that came in to the grocery store, and the guy asked if, like, we were still cooking because we have a kitchen in our grocery store. And my coworker said, oh, well, we are, but not for your kind. And when he said that, I stood up and said, like, you can't say that. He was joking, but I was like, that's not an acceptable joke. But for some reason, yesterday, I just felt like I couldn't really say anything. And I wish I would have.
Well, you know, first, the fact that you're saying something now is important. You know, we don't always have that surge of bravery or clarity of speech or thought that we need to address something. And it sounds like this coworker has said or done things in the past that have also made you uncomfortable. So I don't think that'll be the only time you have to address it. But as a short woman, as a woman, and as a woman of color, what I will tell you is this: be very mindful of when and how you choose to address this, because this is a situation that you're in for a while. And so you want to pick your battle very carefully, and you want to look and see who are your allies in the environment before you say anything. And when you do choose to say something, make sure that you have somebody as a witness who is an ally near you, you know. And if something is really bad, however, and it needs to be addressed immediately, make sure you're in a good place to do that if you really need to do it immediately, because you have to be strategic in this. And and I say this as a woman who's been in lots of environments that were male dominated, like when I was a cadet in the Air Force, for example, or attending some classes or workshops as a union representative. There are times when you have to be mindful of where you are and how you say it, because human beings being human beings, sometimes people want to be vengeful, you know. And you're dealing with someone for whatever reason feels it's okay to make you uncomfortable and to also say these things. And then also, when you can have a lighthearted conversation about it, I would ask him why he feels this is a valid type of conversation. Is he aware of the power dynamic in it, and that when a situation is full of uneven power, and especially when he's the one that's holding the power, it takes the humor out of a situation. It takes the humor away, you know? I was reading this article by a young man who used to watch South Park a lot. And he was talking about how, as he looks at some of the shows, some of that stuff is not funny because it was blatant in your face, but wink, wink, we're not really saying that type of humor. And there's a point in time when you have that much power that a joke that can denigrate or make somebody less than is not a joke. It's not even a microaggression. It's oppression. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And like something that he had told me for the previous encounter is like, oh, you just have to not think about it, you know, and then it's not a big deal. And then it's funny. You just have to not think too much about it.
So that sounds like this person is, okay, for want of a better phrase, I'm going to say this is what I call oppression grooming. And what I mean by oppression grooming, they're trying to, it's a situation where somebody tries to get you used to accepting this kind of power dynamic. So, you know, I would do pushback in the form of, well, why shouldn't I think about it? Shouldn't any humor lend itself to deep thought? Shouldn't anything lend itself to deep thought?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and try to keep it on that level just to keep yourself safe. But also find out who your allies are in this environment and talk to them about ways that you all can work together to make it a safe environment. And that way all of the energy from change or challenge doesn't come from just you. You know, you don't have to become the gender police because that's going to make it harder on you and more stressful, too.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for Brittany for being brave and making that call, because I can tell by the tremble in your voice that it takes a lot to get to that
place.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, thank you so much. You are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. And I can appreciate that maybe some people just don't want to talk about the subject. That's okay. You don't have to. Let's talk to the ones who do. 503-231-8187. And this is not a time for men bashing men, if you're going to call and think that that's where we're coming from. Because I guarantee you, if you've got daughters, if you've got sisters, your wife, I'm sure you don't want them subjected to this. You know, even if you yourself are guilty, don't you want to change and be the best you can be?
Let's go to Daisy.
Good morning, Daisy.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
I was just thinking I wanted to talk about one of the most basic things that people could do for any group of oppressed people, and that is to listen and believe them.
Oh, yeah.
So if a female or a non-binary person is telling you the way you're speaking is invalidating me or making me feel undervalued, or I had an inappropriate interaction with a person, listen and believe. Don't try to rewrite their story. Don't try to validate the person who's offending them, even if it's yourself. Just listen, you know, and really give them a place to speak. I think a lot of people try to gloss over when they feel uncomfortable when someone calls them out, and especially, you know, when it's related to gender or race.
I like that you said that and expanding it. And especially coming from a woman, I think it is very appropriate for us to expand it, since we also are dealing with some intersectionality in this.
For sure.
One of the things that I want to say, in case people are thinking, well, what if the person is not telling the truth? Well, here's the deal. We don't need to get to that right yet. What we need to do is hear the situation, because my question will be is, well, how do you know they're not telling the truth? Let's listen first. And listening to kind of engage with you, Daisy, wouldn't you say that's a whole lot more than just hearing the words? It's like being present and even trying to empathize with where this person's coming from?
Right. And as far as you're saying whether or not they're telling the truth, the thing is that people do not approach difficult conversations when they're, you know, speaking falsehoods.
Yeah, not unless they're sociopathic.
it's really rare for someone to, especially, you know, if it has something to do with sexual assault, you know, and they're trying to tell you their story. They're not going to tell you that kind of story unless they've worked up a lot of courage. And it's been proven time and again that when we speak on our oppressions, we're almost always speaking our truth. So there's that to consider as well. But yeah, just listening, actively listening, you know, not just waiting for your turn to speak. And reflecting on it before you do give an answer is something that men, especially who are used to having the floor, can really like take some time and give us that.
Thank you. Thank you for the call. Thank you for your words,
You're
Daisy.
Welcome.
And thank you for the courage.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's go to James, who has been waiting and listening. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
Good morning. One of the things that I know as a man is that, and that what all men should know, is that much like racism, sexism is part of the DNA of Western culture. I mean, we don't even have to actively support it. Like, we don't have to be sexist in our personal lives to still perpetuate sexism.
Yes.
Because it exists all around us without anything we do or don't do. And what we need to be doing is we need to be calling it out. I like how that one caller said, you know, like, that ain't cool or that's not right. You know, we have this sort of tribal thing as men, is that we want to be accepted by other guys. And so we want to do what's cool, but you can't invalidate somebody else's experience because it makes you feel uncomfortable or has you rethinking your paradigm about how you treat women. I mean, so much of our culture is based around that. And, you know, and I've learned so much. I mean, my Facebook feed is filled with black and Latina feminists.
Mm-hmm.
You get these amazing, you hear these heartbreaking stories, but then you see these amazing wisdom that comes out of it. But then you look at the comments section and it's just, you know, it's just filled with it's filled with men who just don't want to hear it. It's filled with women who are like, oh, don't be crybabies, it happens to everybody.
Right.
You know, one of my friends said that one of my good friends, she's part of New Era Chicago, she said oppression is so, because you talk about black folks on this, but I mean, I guess you could say it about women too, that oppression is so much a part of who we are that liberation to some people can be almost an insult. And it's so true. You know, you have, you know, you can call them whatever you want. We call them coconuts, brown on the outside, white on the inside. You start talking about liberation, they're almost like, well, why would you want that?
Is
it good enough for you now? I mean, why are you trying to make it harder on everybody else? You know, but it's because it's such a part. I mean, it's easy to go after the Weinsteins and the Trumps of the world because they're the faces. They can be, they're separate from our daily lives. There's somebody that we can point to, but what about that uncle at the cookout who you can't bring any, your sister or your daughter can't bring any friends around because he acts like, yes, like a pervert.
Or what about your sibling, you know, your brother?
Yeah,
what about the husband like, that you love dearly, who is now all of a sudden manifested some male insecurity that has him buying into that whole dynamic? How do you deal with that? I hear you. So here's my question for you. Because I'm not making assumptions. I'm asking a question. Are you a person of color?
Yeah, I'm a person of color.
Okay. Now, when it comes to dealing with how this gender dynamic of sexual harassment has its moments of intersectionality, within your cultural group, how easy is it to you for you to interrupt oppression when it's kind of the in-group thing, and you see men within your cultural group being insensitive to women? Is it easier, or does your culture sometimes have its own challenges with gender equity and fairness?
Well, it definitely has a lot of problems with gender equity and fairness, only because we've, you know, as Mexicans, as Chicanos, I mean, we were, you know, we've thoroughly been, you know, inundated with Western colonized cultures. So, I mean, there's no room for homosexuality. There's no room for, at least in the general mindset, there's no room for that. It causes too many problems. But at least for me personally, I have no problem calling it out. It's just you have to get past that place of needing acceptance, you know, and that's something that a lot of people of color have a problem with. Mm-hmm. You know, we're taught to hate ourselves from the beginning.
Yes.
You know, so it's like trying to find acceptance, you know, within a culture that oppresses us, and then doubly, you know, and then taking that and saying, well, if I stand up for, you know, this woman who's being harassed, I won't be accepted by my people. And more importantly, you know, I won't be accepted by the overarching culture. So I think it's actually very easy to fall into that, because we have such a hard time being accepted and being loved just for who we are, for the skin that we're in, that trying to stand up for somebody else, it's almost, it can almost be too much.
And I can
empathize with that. I mean, I'm still trying to find acceptance within my culture, because I was taught to hate myself.
Yes.
And, you know, so, but it's like, I watch my mom deal with, you know, so much sexism. I mean, she really was like, I mean, she was one of those ladies who was, she was skinny all her life, skinny and pretty, so men would just give her stuff. And when she had my baby brother and couldn't lose the weight, it destroyed her world, because that's how she got by.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't have really any other skills except for that. And it's like, you know, when you can look at that and say that's still a legitimate way to get by, just being tiny and pretty, being slim, and, you know, and it's like, I don't know. I mean, it's still amazing to me that in this day and age that, you know, we still have women out there who, you know, I have a friend of mine who hasn't finished high school and doesn't have a driver's license or even a GED, and I just worry about her, because, you know, granted, her husband takes better care of herself now, but if something were to happen to him, she would be not in a good place. And I don't know, it's really tough. But I mean, we as men really need to start calling out our friends, our family. We need to not worry about making the cookout uncomfortable. We need to, you know, it's like when we see oppression, whether it's because of our skin color, or because of what genitalia or our sexual orientation happens to be, we need to call it out. It needs to be just as important as brushing your teeth or taking a shower.
Thank you, James.
Yes, thank you so much.
For sharing.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you guys for bringing this up. This is a really tough conversation to have, and I'm glad to hear that you have people calling in to talk about it.
Thank you for your call. And you are listening to More Talk Radio. I am here with my esteemed and supportive co-host, Cecil Prescott. I'm Celeste Carey. And we want to encourage you. Now, I'm going to say this, because this is not a one-off situation in human history. We will revisit this. So if it's a little too much for you to handle right now, don't worry. You can always send us email. You can hit talk radio up directly through the KBOO website, or you can hit us at moretalkradio@gmail.com. And More Talk Radio is one word, all lowercase, isn't it? Right. All lowercase. And chat with us. And let us know how you feel and what's on your mind. Now, let you know, I can't hear that there's another caller.
Yes.
So sorry, Joe. Sorry. Thank you.
Ash is on the phone.
Good morning, Ash. Hello?
Good morning. Yes, thank you so much for proposing this conversation. It is quite difficult, and my comment is to your previous, the initial question that I heard about how can we encourage men to speak up, and it came to mind an inspiration. So in my perspective, it is men who support and hold up women that appear to be the most strong and the most powerful, as opposed to the antithesis. When I hear of a man talking down about a woman, I think, what a weak person, what an issue they have that they haven't been able to address or overcome, or that they've allowed to be insidious in their life. And the context of my purview is that I work with, in the hospital setting, with families during the birth of their child.
Mm-hmm.
And for years, it's just been kind of this thing blowing me away that there's TVs in these rooms, and that oftentimes the fathers are watching the televisions while the women are laboring and birthing. I mean, less so when the birth is actually happening, but during the labor. And it was always this sort of thing, very kind of uncomfortable, but you know, in the culture, you sort of grow to accept it because there's TVs in basically every labor room across the country.
So hold on for a minute, Ash. Hold on, because our connection is really bad. So I'm going to try to recap what it is you're saying in case the quality is preventing folks from joining in.
Sure.
If I hear you,
is
you
that
work.
Better?
Oh, yeah, that's better. But to do a quick recap, you're talking about how within labor and delivery rooms in a hospital, and you've got men in there with their companions who are literally laboring to have this baby, the men may be distracted by TV, and how that's really surprised you. And so do you see this as just one of the many ways in which we as human beings have allowed ourselves to be acculturated away from human connection? Or do you see this as some type of gender power play?
I feel like it's a loss of an opportunity for a man to, or, you know, a partner in general, for a man, though, in this scenario of the gender specifics, a man supporting a woman, for a man, it's a loss of an opportunity for a man to be present and to, you know, mm-hmm. acknowledge all of the work and all of the power that she has and come out on the other side of it with utmost, you know, respect and awe as they go to parent this child. And the other, so that's how it has resonated with me, that scenario. But the inspiration is that as a woman in the birthing rooms, like the majority of nurses, you know, you don't say anything to the men. You don't say anything. And years ago, I had an opportunity to work with a male labor and delivery nurse. Mm-hmm. And he would go in the room, you know, take over and start his shift and go in the room, and the man would be sitting and watching the TV. And he'd say, hey, man, why don't you turn that off and come over to the bedside here? She's really laboring good. Well, let's spend some time with her. And the man would shut that TV off and get right up. And, you know, and as a woman, in my experience, you'd say, well, let's turn it off so we can have this conversation. But then as soon as you'd stop the conversation or leave, the TV would come back on.
Right.
And this is just to say that I wanted to acknowledge my fellow colleague who happens to be a male in the same setting about the power of their ability to speak up and cause change and cause attention.
Yes.
And cause,
yes.
You know, so in that sense, I'm just saying, you know, this is birth coming into the world is where we all begin. All these babies are born pure, and they all come into families that have their own dynamics. And, you know, like I said, back to my point, in my purview, the powerful men and the strong men are those that support women in their own power. They say, my woman is powerful. Look at how she's working. I'm going to acknowledge her and give her attention.
Perfect.
Rather than the attention's not on me, I'm going to hang over here. Or maybe they feel like they don't know how to help. But then I see the strong men say, how can I help? Please tell me where can I push? Where can I hold her hand? What can I do? And
So they help model how to do that change. And I want to thank you for bringing that up, because that is one of the things that we need men to do as women, not just with regard to harassment issues and dynamics, but within the whole context of male-female relationships. So that's a perfect place to end the call. Thank you so much, Ash.
Thank you.
I want to thank those folks who were strong and brave enough to call in and support those who did not feel able. We'll be back. This is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 in the city. In the world, KBOO.FM. Stay tuned. We have coming up the Old Mo Variety Hour, and thanks and a hat tip to our engineer, Joe Clement. Take it away.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Journalist, author, and activist David Barsamian will be speaking about the broad coalition in opposition to the Trump administration, which includes activists from a range of causes, progressive Democrats, and concerned Republicans. He'll be reflecting on the core issues at stake today and why so many people from such a range of identities and perspectives are challenging the administration. Again, that's KBOO Presents David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-1000.